Blog Talk Radio.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Leonard Johnson calling, coming from you from Santee, South Carolina, with the Triple Wing Hammer Report. And we got a good show lineup for you today. We got the great Doug Kerr from Kansas, and we'll bring him on in a few minutes here and talk about his brand of single wing. But man, what a game yesterday. Man, I tell you, never count the old dogs out. That was a great game, and if there's one thing that we have learned is never quit. And the Patriots just kept plugging away until they came up on top and everything. And I am not a Patriots fan, but I got to give them their due. Coach Charlie Sherrick has built him an organization that may not have the best talent, but they just refuse to lose, and they just go out to win. They don't know no other way to do it. And if there's one thing I think everybody should come away from that game, all the coaches and everything, is that you just don't know. You run a system and you believe in the system, and you keep going with that system, and good things will happen for you and everything. But now we get ready to talk about wings. And like I've always said, any offense with a wing is dangerous. And we got Doug Kerr coming on. And Doug is probably the guy who got me started in the single wing business, because I was looking at a video, and I met Doug before I even met some of the gurus in there. And they ran this little play called a wedge, and I couldn't find the ball when I was looking at the videos. And I said, I got to get that. And so I sent Doug an email or call him or something. And a couple of days later, I had a video looking at it and studying it and everything. So that was very, very generous of him then. And we finally met, I think, in Missouri at one of the single wing meetings we had. And since that day, I've been a believer in the wing. So let's see if we can get Doug on right now and see if we can pick his brains about single wing, because he has been with all of the old timers. Doug, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Did you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I hear you well. Did I bring you on good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're good.
Okay. Oh, man. What did you think about that game yesterday?
Oh, you know, I fell in love with the Falcons in the first half because they were running the ball so well, and you don't see that anymore in the NFL. And they're running that old-fashioned toss sweep, getting those guards out. And I played college football with a kid that's now in the Falcons front office. So I was kind of pulling for the Falcons, but like you just said in your intro, you got to give the Patriots their due because, I mean, 28 points down and just to not give up and keep fighting and just an amazing football game.
I talked to my classes today about that, and I said, you know, the one thing that all of us should have gotten from that game is never, ever, ever, ever get up and give up. And not only with football, but with life, because you never know when that next step is going to kick you over the top and everything. And that was a great lesson in just being persistent and stay to itness. Well, Doug, hardly anybody knows you anymore because we don't see you.
Right.
So you want to tell some people who this great Doug Kerr is. And I tell you guys, this is one of the best in the business. So go ahead, Doug, and tell us about yourself.
Well, I can tell you, if people are listening and they know Doc Ward, there's probably no one in the country that knows Doc Ward better than I do. I played for Doc Ward in 1995 at Lindenwood College. He was our defensive coordinator. And I played for Doc for a year, and then he left college football and took a job at Port St. Lucie High School. And when I graduated, he called back up to the school to see if anybody would be interested in coming down and coaching high school football. And we got rehooked up, and I came down and was his assistant coach for 5 years at three different schools and became a coordinator for him. And when he left and went back to North Carolina, I kind of liked the beach and just stayed down in Florida and got my first head coaching job at 24 years old, and then just kind of been bebopping around. I've had the opportunity after Doc Ward. I was a head coach in Gainesville, Florida, at Bronson High School, and Mark Bliss, who everybody knows is kind of the master of that T-Series, he took a job in Florida and said, "I don't know the first thing about it. Would you come be my line coach?" And the money was right, and my wife wanted to move to Naples, and so I worked with him and learned the whole T-Series. And on that same staff, Jim Ahern came on staff from Michigan, so we learned the whole spread, this whole spread single wing. And Mark left after a year, kind of got homesick, and went back to the Midwest, and Coach Ahern and I hooked up. I got a head job at the school I started at, Port St. Lucie, and I hired Coach Ahern as my offensive coordinator. And so we actually sat down and designed the offense that I run now, and he's kind of spread it, and we use a tight end still, and that's where we're at now. And 4 years ago, guy kind of got caught in the housing crunch and decided to do something different. And I'm originally from Kansas, and a job opened up in a small school out here in southeast Kansas, and you know, if you know Doc Ward very well, you know he's always went to places that are struggling and has turned them around. And somehow I got that blessing / curse. And so we came out here to Iola, and it was probably one of the toughest jobs I've ever had to take on, turning things around. And we've actually got it turned in the right direction now. And next year, I really look forward to next year because we got some good kids coming up.
Now, how long have you been at your at Iola?
This is my fifth year.
This will be your number five. And have been
I'm going into sixth next year, yeah.
Oh, okay, next year it'll be sixth. So you're in your fifth year. Have mm-hmm. you felt resistance to the system, to the single wing system there?
Yeah, no, there was no resistance because they were so bad, and they were a spread team, and they were just three fades and a punt. And one of the things we knew is the single wing could keep scores down because we're chewing up clock and keeping the other offense off the board. So that first year we ran a lot of single wing that they'd never seen before, and we were the only one in southeast Kansas running it. And so we won the league title. It was only their third league title in the history of their school, 112 years. And we won the league title those first 2 years. And everybody was sold on the single wing. And, you know, sometimes the single wing, if you don't have success early, people kind of get down on it because that's the excuse of why you're not winning. Well, you weren't winning before, so I don't think it's a single wing. But, you know, having success early really helps the program.
Okay. I experienced the same thing with the when we were running the double wing. You know, that first year we sucked, and everybody wanted to run me out of Dodge. And even though the school had lost 30 games in a row, somehow, some way, we stuck with it. And the next thing you know, well, you know the history and everything. But, you know, the thing I say to young coaches all the time is find something that you believe in and do it until you are very successful. Study what, I don't care what it is. If you just want to run the dive, find the best way to run the dive. And you find a lot of coaches who go from this system to this system to this system, and they're never really successful, and they wonder why. If you were to tell a young coach what to do, and not necessarily run the same wing, what advice would you give him? Because you have been you were head coach at age 24, and I'm sure life has changed a lot since age 24.
Oh my goodness, yes. I'll be honest with you. From a single wing perspective, I would never go to the symposium because you come home with 500 ideas and you want to install all of them. That whole phrase that you've heard at clinics where they say, if you can learn one thing, it's a great clinic. You go to a single wing symposium or clinic or anything, you're going to learn more than one thing. And I would say advice-wise, I would just tell young coaches, like kind of like you said, pick what you want to do and then stick with it. You know, these coaches that tinker with things, we face a school here, and we've beat them, I think we've beat them 4 out of 5 years, and they run a different offense every week. And, you know, you think the kids will like it because it's new and fresh, but they never get a handle on any of them. And you know, we're dealing with 16- and 17-year-old children who are designed to fail at this age. And, you know, so like you said, we got to keep it simple and keep something that they can believe in and hang their hat on.
Your kids, you didn't have much resistance. I talked to you about this when you first went to Iola. You didn't have much resistance from your kids, did you?
Oh, no. No, the kids more than anything, they were searching for someone to tell them it's going to be okay. And we come – my approach is really a real positive approach. I'm not a real hollering and screaming guy, and that fit with these kids because my guy before me was a screamer and a hollerer. And so once they felt like I was there for them, and I was there for their long-term future, not just winning that Friday night. We really clicked quickly. And, you know, the 5 years I've been here, all the kids that graduate, we're still really close and communicate. And they follow our games every Friday night on the radio and on the internet. And so it's become a family atmosphere. So, but they clicked right away.
Mm-hmm. And did you put a lot of kids in school during that period of time, or – you just had
This is our first year we didn't have any, and it was because the kids really weren't interested in running playing football in college. We were up to 10 in 4 years, you know, getting them into somewhere where they can play, and that's been a big change. I'm a real rah-rah guy when it comes to signing day, and we make a big signing day, and we make cupcakes and bring in the kids for the auditorium, and it may be to a junior college or an NAIA school, and we still make them feel like it's, you know, they're on ESPN, and we'll go out, and the boosters will buy the hats of the college that they're going to, so we'll have the hat sitting there, and you know, even if it's a junior college, you know, and that makes them feel special, and it makes those kids sitting in the stands go, man, I want to do that someday, and that helps out a lot.
So they do it in front of the entire student body?
I bring everybody in the gym and make a big deal out of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I know one thing you put at the top of your bio is that you said you outkick your coverage.
Oh, absolutely. My wife, I wonder often, what did I do to deserve to get my wife? She's just about as good as a coach's wife as you could ever ask for. Before we had kids, she used to film, and she was the only one I could ever get to film the single wing and know where the ball was going. You know all too well with the double wing, if you get a filmer that tries to follow the misdirection, you can have awful film. And so for the first 4 or 5 years of my coaching career, she filmed all of our games, and now she makes brownies for the kids, and she's supportive of now she doesn't sit in the stands anymore. She sits down at the end of the gate because she doesn't like hearing all the All-American quarterbacks that are sitting in our stands. But she's very supportive.
And you got two great kids.
I got two little boys, yeah. and a daughter. That's 13 going on 23 right now. So I'm learning how to be a father at 13 years old.
God bless you. I know what you're about to go through, my man.
Yeah, I thought teenagers are bad, but when you have your own teenager, I love her to death, and she comes and fills the water bottles on Friday nights for us and gets on the players when they come to the sideline. But, boy, those some days you wake up and look in that room and go, I don't know if I want to deal with that today. So,
mm-hmm. What do you do, because you've been to several schools and everything, as a head coach and also as a coordinator, what do you do to get the kids, number one, develop, and number two, get them excited about what you want to do, not necessarily the single wing, but excited about playing in your system? What do you do? It's about program building.
Well, you know, I think the number one thing, if you ever meet a great coach, I think number one, they're a great salesman. I've always believed that a coach, if he ever got out of coaching, he needs to go into sales. And a lot of times when you meet those guys that are selling sporting goods and selling you equipment, they're coaches, and the ones that sell a lot are probably good coaches, because you have to sell not only the program, but you got to sell yourself. And kids today are just so different than they were. Even when I started coaching in the late 90s and early 2000s, they're not very trustworthy. They're instant answers. You know, they want this now because that's their world. And this new generation of kids is so different. And you have to sell yourself every day. And you have to live true to your word. I find it interesting all the time when you go to these coaches' clinics and you see coaches that are just getting drunk and partying and all that, and you know that's not a one-time thing. And it's hard for me to sit there and tell kids to not drink and drive, not do drugs, and then you see them out partying and you're not living what your message is. And I think, number one, you got to live your message. And number two, you know, we're in the business of building men, and I always like that phrase, but I've kind of taken it a step further the last few years, and my role is to build heroes, because heroes are what all of us want our children to be. And for me to build a hero, I got to be a hero. You know, I got to be a hero to my three kids first, and I got to be a hero to these kids in this school. If that means going out and embarrassing myself during a faculty dodgeball game, then so be it. You know, if I want them to be competitive, I'm in my weights class, and when we max out, they know I'm going to jump on that bench press and be 1 pound stronger than the heaviest kid in the class, just so I can make them work. And I think these kids today, you know, they just got to believe in you. And if they believe in you, they're amazing kids. But if they don't, you won't be long for that job. I know that.
Mm-hmm. You run the spread single wing. How did you make that jump from basically what Doc did? You know, Doc believes in 56, and that's off tackle mm-hmm. play. How did you make that change? You know, subtle change in philosophy, or do you still have the same philosophy? Don't let me assume anything.
Well, we love off tackle, and it's kind of funny. You know, you go in with an idea of, man, we could be good this year doing this and that, and you eventually go back to what you do. I mean, I can imagine at your school you might have a 6'4 kid that can throw the ball around the park, and you go all summer on 7-on-7 thinking this is a great thing, and then your creature's a habit, and you go back and you run the hammer, you know, because that's just what we are. 56 is always going to be in our playbook until I stop coaching, and the kids know it. But the spread, you know, I worked with Coach Ahern for several years, and we still talk at least once a week. And I say we're spread because our wing back is in a slot some just to get a guy out of the box. And our tailback, instead of putting him next to the quarterback, we'll put him out in the slot a little bit to the short side just to get some momentum. You know, I gave a presentation a couple of years ago at one of the symposiums that said from the jet sweep to the crop duster sweep, because we just didn't have kids that could run. And, you know, it's a lot different. Where I was in South Florida, you know, we had 3 years in a row of kids that ended up in the NFL. And here, I don't know if we'll ever have an NFL player, but so we had to get them in motion just to get them around the corner. And so I've made that transition, but you can bet we're going to go off tackle. It's just going to be a different window dressing to get off tackle than the old direct snap 56.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I just love to hear people just be honest, but put it in a comical way, how you lead from the jet sweep to the crop duster. I mean, that's classic right there.
No, it was brutal. That first year we ran the jet sweep, and I had a kid, and he told me how fast he was. The first game, the inside linebacker got him, and I said, we don't even block that kid. We don't block inside linebacker because he can't catch the jet sweep. And I had Justin Simmons was with us at Martin County. He's a safety for the Broncos. And Albert Wilson plays receiver for the Chiefs. Well, those are my jet backs while I was in Florida the last 8 years. And I get up here and I'm going, guys, yeah, it's going to be – so it's loaded sweep now because you're like a bunch of crop dusters. And heck, they thought that was respectful to be called a crop duster in the Midwest. And I said, guys, you're missing the boat, man.
Oh man, it's good to be able to laugh at yourself, I tell you.
Yep.
You've been able to coach with some great guys. I mean, all these guys are going to be on the show at one time or another. But you know, you've been around a bunch of good single wing guys. I'm talking about Doc, who I think is brilliant. I mean, he's so good at this thing. He does it in his sleep. Then you talk about Jim Ahern. Actually, he was the first guy I ever met in single wing, you know, when I went to Missouri. And then Mark Bliss. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about guys who have really done it. And a lot of these guys don't know who these guys are. How many state championships did Mark win in Kansas? Was it Kansas that he's from?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how many state championships?
Six. He won six out of 8 years.
Six out of 8 years, and mm-hmm. basically running this. That's all he ran, the single wing, you know. So and
it was
so
straight double tight T series.
Yeah, and this stuff is. I mean, the wing series, people, whatever, you know, I get excited just even talking about it. But you know, it gives your kids a chance, you know, and when you give your kids a chance, some way somehow they find. They find it. You want to talk a little bit about these guys that you've been associated with?
Sure. I mean, you know, if you've ever gone to the conclave, Doc Ward, you know, to start off with, he and I started running single wing in 99 when we were 0-4. We were running wishbone, and we were just god awful. And I was ready to resign as an O-line coach because we couldn't do anything right, and we were just getting murdered. And he called me over and the offensive coaches to his house, and he goes, now you're going to think I'm nuts, but let's do this. And I said, well, what else do we have to lose? We're 0-4. And so we had an off week that week, and we sat in his house for 3 days straight and said, this is what we want to run. It was all direct snap power stuff. And, man, we showed the kids that week. And you know, John's going to convince you that what you're believing is right, no matter what. And, mm-hmm. He just has that way with people. And so we put it in, and we upset a team that week in Jupiter, Florida, and we ran that wedge so many times. And I said, I walked over to him in the game and I said, you know, John, this is the dumbest offense of all time. And he said, what do you mean? I said, we're literally running quarterback sneak for 18 to 20 yards a carry. And it makes no sense. This is dumb. And I said, eventually someone's going to just murder us. And he goes, oh, they got to find it first. And we had a great season, then had a great season the next year. And that blocking back wedge has been in my offense. It'll never not be in the offense. But I learned so much from him for rebuilding programs. Now, Coach Bliss is probably the most perfectionist type of person I've ever met. We'll run his 32-buck dive 65 times in practice until it was as good as he wanted it. And when we got to Palmetto Ridge, we had 80-some-odd kids that first day, and he had asked the kids, raise your hand if you've ever played varsity football before. And we had like 7 kids out of 80-some that had played varsity football. And we just coached our tails off, and Mark will – he'll outwork people. If you don't know that about Mark Bliss, he will just outwork you. And we went 5-5 that year with 7 kids who'd ever played varsity. And
in
then
Florida.
And then Jim
yeah.
In
that
Florida.
Was in Florida. Yeah.
That was in Palmetto Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jim Ahern, for the listeners, if you've never sat and spent 10 minutes with him, you're missing it. I mean, the guy's a legend in Michigan. He can sit there with a lollipop in his mouth and break down defenses before you can even figure out what defense they're in. He's already got the play called and in. He's just an offensive mastermind. And what he's been able to do the last 8 years up in Lansing Catholic with those kids. Now, he's had 2 big-time quarterbacks that one of them's probably going to get drafted this year, and one of them's at Central Michigan taking over for the one that's leaving. But that guy knows more about the passing game. He's forgotten more than I'll ever learn, you know, and he's been so successful and such a good friend of mine and so giving, you know. Actually, I was on the phone with him last night talking to him about a clinic I'd been to over the weekend, and he said, well, I'll have to look at that. Send me that, and I might put that in, you know. And it's like, well, why would you? You're one of the winningest coaches in the state of Michigan. And always trying to learn, you know. And they're all 3 amazing. And, you know, I forgot to tell you, the one person, that, and you've met him before, moving back to Kansas, I got to get back acquainted with Dan Johnson, who actually started the National Single Wing Coaches Association back in the mid-90s. And he comes to about 3 games a year. And that guy dates back, I think, to Coach Rockne. I think him and Newt Rockne were friends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been an amazing run.
Yeah. And you also you got George out of Caldwell, Colorado. Reykjavik?
Yep, George Reykjavik. I spent a lot of time with George as well.
And guys, we're talking about legends. I mean, we're talking about guys who took this thing way back in the day and have brought it to modern football, and they're still successful at doing what they do. And you know, if you ever get bored with the fun and gun and spread them up, shoot them up and everything, I strongly advise you look at an offense just because it can return your program around. It can make you sleep at night because you know, you think that it's crazy and everything, but it's very defined in what you. Do you have a lot of academic issues at your school?
No, that's been kind of a pleasant surprise. We're pretty strict on the grades here. We're in a small community, so it doesn't take long for people to find out if the grades are good or grades are bad. We have about 350 students. And academics have been pretty strong in our school. I'm trying to think, in my 5 years, we've maybe had 1 or 2 kids that were ineligible. Now, we have some different rules. They don't go by the GPA here. They go by the previous semester passing a number of classes. So it's a little bit different than when I was in Florida. You had to have a 2.0 GPA all the time. But, you know, we've done pretty good. We do study hall. On Thursdays, you know, a lot of coaches like to do that early Thursday where they get in and out in an hour, And I like to do a study hall for an hour before we go out, so it's actually a normal day for us. And then Friday's not a stress day because a game day Friday, they're not worried about their homework because they got it all done on Thursday. So academics are pretty solid.
Okay. And your off-season conditioning, what do you do?
Well, that's been the biggest, one of the biggest changes of moving back here. You know, with 120 some odd boys in the school, usually we only have 6 to 10 kids that aren't playing basketball or wrestling. So now I also have all of them in my weights class during the day. So they all lift weights with me during the day, and then they go to their other sport. So to date, I haven't had to do an off season, so to speak. I might bring a couple kids in that aren't doing anything and do some drill work or some agility if I think, you know, if they want to talk about moving from O-line to fullback or, you know, linebacker to defensive back or something like that. But for the most part, I've been kind of blessed on that. And I thought I would miss it, not, you know, coming from Florida. I thought I'd miss off season, but it's kind of good for me. Now I'm coaching track, so that catches a lot of kids as well. But, no, we haven't had too much off season.
And your staff. What kind of staff do you have? What do you look for in a coach that you would
Well, you know, number one, and I learned this from John, from Doc Ward, number one is loyalty. Loyalty to me and loyalty to the program. And I tell the coaches when we hire them, and I've been lucky, three of my four coaches, we have four coaches on staff and myself. Three of my four have been with me the entire 5 years. We just had one change, and the one we got was a great one. Now, but you know, I think loyalty is such a lost art these days, and you probably see it with your coaching staff. And you may have a great coach, but he's the one on the sideline when it's third and one, you know, whispering, "Well, we should do this, we should do that," and then when it's third and 12, he doesn't have an answer. You know, so loyalty to me is one of the biggest attributes that you can be to a coach. Even if he's wrong, you know, that respect level of they're still the head coach. They've earned that word head coaching title. And you got to be loyal to them. And, you know, especially running single wing. You know, because you said there's going to be times where they try to run you out down. And the last thing we need is assistant coaches over there saying, "Well, yeah, I try to talk to them about doing this." But on the same sense, loyalty sometimes can mean disagreeing with the coach if you think they're wrong. You know, if you disagree with the coach, you know, that's sometimes healthy because, you know, maybe I didn't see something that they did, and that maybe they see it like a kid sees it, and we need to address it that way. So, but I'd say number one is loyalty, and number two is probably passion for the game. You know, signing up, it's going to be a lot of hours and a lot of work, and there's going to be just as many in bad moments as there are good moments, and you got to have passion for the game, because if the kids don't see you out there having fun and having passion, they're not going to.
So those are the two main things you have, loyalty and, and passion.
Yep.
Now, do you have a lot of people want to come into your program, or are they just as far as coaching? I mean, do you have people who call?
Yeah, we actually have a good setup now. The middle school is right across the street from us, and they've got a four-man staff. And then our youth program is fifth and sixth grade and third and fourth grade. And when I got here, the youth director, he was real gracious about opening up. And we run summer camps for our youth in the middle school, and they install – I tell them all the time, you don't have to run every play we run. But if you can name the positions that we name them and have the holes the same, it just makes it so much easier for us. And, you know, call the linebackers what we call them, Sam, Mike, and Will, or, you know, this is a strong safety. That helps out so much. So on Friday nights, most of the time, our junior high coaches are down on the sideline doing stats or helping with equipment, or, you know, if we're short a filmer, one of my middle school coaches will go down and do the end zone film. And then, you know, in Kansas, the only negative right now that I've found in Kansas is we do not allow volunteers in the state. We have no volunteers. Everybody's got to be paid. And so that is kind of a tough thing, because you know, volunteers, you love volunteers because that's free help, you know, and a good volunteer is worth two paid coaches, I think. Because you know they're in it for the loyalty and passion, because they're not getting paid, so they love it. But our coaching staff situation is pretty solid out here. They care about the kids, and we have a good deal.
Now, what about your community? How do you get your community involved with you?
Well, I think, like I said earlier, you got to be a good salesman. In the fact that I've spoke at just about every organization, Rotary Club and City Pride Club and stuff like that, and I make them involved. And Doc Ward, he loves opening up that some of his speeches with the difference between committed and involved, and you know that it's the beginning breakfast, and the chicken's committed to the breakfast, but the pig's involved, you know. He tries to get involvement from everybody, and so we do a lot of things. Now, one thing we do that I really enjoy is on Saturday mornings during the season, we have churches in town, and we take the boys to a different church every Saturday and feed them and then watch film as a team at that church. And we don't do anything as far as scripture or forcing them to listen to anything, but it just gets them out in the community, and it makes the church have pride and their breakfast. And, you know, the Midwest people love making biscuits and gravy and big breakfasts. And heck, I've gained so much weight since I moved here from that. But you know, we get them out in the community and do a lot of community service work. We have a big town festival in October, and our kids are in the parade and involved in that. And I think that's a huge thing that helps you, especially if you're going through some struggles with young team or a team that's not real talented. You know, we have really good community support, and that's a big plus coming from a school where you're at a big school and there's five schools in a district and no one has allegiance to anybody. So I really enjoy that.
Now, how did you finish up this past year?
This year we went 4-5. We finished second in the league, and we qualified for the state playoffs. And how they do the state playoffs in Kansas, they don't seed it. They do it by regional, and our region happened to have the number one team in the state, and so we drew them right off the bat, and it didn't start well, but once we got our foothold in, we played them pretty well in the second half, but it was only the fourth time in the school history they'd ever been to the playoffs, so the kids are excited about it, and you know, after the game was over, they were disappointed, but the community made T-shirts because we'd made the playoffs, and they were just so happy to be playing in November that, you know, the loss was not good, but we enjoyed so much of it. And like I told the kids, we actually got an extra week of practice out of it than some of our opponents that didn't make it. So I think we've got to the point where they now know that's achievable every year, where when I first got here, the playoffs were never even discussed because – they made it one time in 06 on kind of a backdoored in, and before that it was 1986 was the last time they were in the playoffs.
So do you have most of those kids coming back from last year, or was that a...
Yeah, we lost our quarterback and a couple linemen from the offense, but our two leading rushers – and our best receiver come back next year. And so we feel if we can get the pieces around them in order, the offensive line should be the strongest line I've had since I've been here. And you know all too well, if you have a good offensive line, you can run any kind of play with a wing behind it, and you're going to be successful. You have the big boys up front pushing. And we'll have a really good line next year. I think our struggle will be on the other side of the ball, if we can tackle people, because we'll be a little undersized on defense. And if we can tackle people and run to the football, we could be that team no one wants to face. Because I can tell you, every coach we face, they don't want to see that offense on film. They come over, and you know how that works. They come over, and they're dog cussing you halfway across the field because they hate running against. They can't find the wedge, and our wedge has been called – wedge back, sniffer back, pull back. They, you know, they'll say anything just to get them to know where it is.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to separate these two. I'm going to talk about your building for a second, your school building.
Okay.
I'm going to separate between teachers and the administration. Let's talk about what is your relationship with your coworkers and your teachers and everything. How do they work with you as far as keeping these kids together? And you know, how do you and your teachers get along?
Well, you know, I think the best part about it was we had some early success, and the kids bought in, and we do so much stuff. Like we do a teacher of the week during football season, and the kids pick a teacher and get them a T-shirt, and they're allowed to come down the sideline. And we wear shirt and ties on Fridays instead of jerseys, and have really flipped the script on how that works. And, you know, we make the kids go to the homecoming dance, win or lose, you know, so that they respect it. We sing the fight song at the end of every game regardless. And the teachers have really appreciated that, and they appreciate that I've been in the core classes, and I used to be an English and reading teacher before I came here. And so, you know, they know that I'm not just a guy looking to get some wins to get somewhere else. So they know we're in it for the long haul, and we've had a great response with the teachers. And, you know, in a small school, most of the teachers coach something, and so that's been real productive as well. Administration-wise, when I first got here, the superintendent, the principal, and the two assistant principals all were previous football coaches. So I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't get a better deal than that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really well. It's been really good.
So your administration, they really work with you as much as they can?
As much as they can. And, you know, right now with budget cuts and stuff like that, it's never a fun thing. And we understand that athletics are you going to take the brunt of the cuts, because it's not affecting the classroom directly. It still does. But and they know that I have a better chance of raising funds for my program as opposed to the English teacher for books. So, you know, we've taken some cuts as far as the funding goes. But for the most part, you know, if we need something, they've been real receptive. And they kind of let us do our own thing. You know, they keep us in line if we get out of kilter. You know, that they're not real keen about me pulling the kids out for a football game early so I can get up there and get loosened up. But other than that, it's been good.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want you to take a little bit of time, because a young guy called me last week. Young guy, he wanted to know about the single wing, and he's thinking about doing it. And I said, well, you know, we're going to have to sit down and talk. And, you know, he's going to come up here next weekend, and we're going to sit down and take a couple of days and talk. Where would you start if a young guy comes to you and says, I want to run the single wing? How would you counsel him?
Well, you know, and that's a funny story, because as a reference, I can tell you, and you know Rick Darlington through the single wing circles. Rick, Coach Darlington, he called me one day and said, hey, I got your number when we were down in Florida about single wing, and I want to know about single wing. And kind of like him, kind of like you said to that young man, I told him, okay, let's sit down and meet. And I brought some films, and having worked with so many different single wing coaches, the first thing I told him was, tell me what your passion is before the single wing. And he kind of told me they were a flex bone team. And I said, okay. And I said, what is it you want to get out of it? You know, are you running it because you saw Clemson do it in the national title, or Tim Tebow run it? Or are you doing it because, you know, you're curious? Find out, really do some investigating about why they want to run it. Is it a gimmick to them, or is it something they want to believe in? Because you and I both have seen people run it as a gimmick, and it never works. You know, they get out of it right away. And, you know, Coach Darlington and I sat down one day in Orlando for 8 or 9 hours and watched film, and I gave him phone numbers of people and, you know, helped him with his journey and said, this is a dude you want to talk to If you want to run spin, you need to talk to Doc Ward. If you want to run T-Series, Mark Bliss, and so on and so forth. And, you know, I think that's the big thing is you want to get an idea of why they want to run it. And if they want to run it because they want something different from what they do normally, then, okay, here's what we need to do. And then, you know, I think a lot of it, and I listened to last week when you were talking to Corey, and Corey and I, man, there for a while, Corey was texting or calling every week. Now, Coach, what would you do about this and that? And I think that's one of the most wonderful things about single wing is, man, coaches don't just see you at a clinic, give it to you, and you leave. You can call any time of the day, any night, you know, on a Saturday. Hey, Coach, I ran this, and this is what happened. What would you do? And everybody's so giving, you know, on the single wing. But, you know, you sit there and you develop a relationship with them, and then you send them on their direction of their journey. And that's how we've done it since 1998, since I was introduced into it. And I've just passed on everything I know. You know, you were the summer we went to Colorado and you spoke, and George went out there and did that online on-the-field demonstration. We ran that this year because I had a kid that was an eye back, and he'd only run his whole life and didn't understand catching the direct snap. And so we ran the single wing and put him in the pistol, and he rushed for 1,100 yards as a sophomore because to him it was the eye formation, but to me it was single wing blocking. And I think that's, you know, and I called George and thanked him a million times for teaching me the T-Series out of the pistol. And I think that's the beautiful thing about this, and that's why people still do it. And that's why you could call Doc Ward at 10 o'clock at night, and now you better not have any minutes restrictions on your phone because you're going to eat up your minutes. But he'll talk to you until he's blue in the face. And, you know, and you go up to Jeff Byrell in Michigan, will do the same thing on 49 short option. Or, you know, Coach Ahern's the same way. And Coach Darlington now, he's chatting all over the country about single wing. So that's what I would say if I'm teaching a young coach. Find out what your passion is. And if you're an I formation and you can run your I formation blocking with single wing, then great, you know.
It is not that hard to do. And, you know, and it's I tell you what, it saved my coaching career because I was, you know, I was heading downhill fast, you know, because never could find a quarterback to do anything. And then I ran into the double wing, and then I merged Doc. Doc was the only one who could teach me the, you know, the block down kick out where it made sense. And I combined those two things, and it was history from there. We added some things to it, and it's just amazing what happens when you get people who are passionate about you being successful. I think that's the key.
Right.
These guys really want to see you successful. You know, they just, you know, they love it. You know, when you are successful, and you know, they can say I help another guy and everything.
Right.
The resources and stuff. Guys don't believe me when I say that we give away stuff. Could you talk about that for a second?
As far as giving away film?
Film and materials and stuff.
Well, I can tell you, it doesn't happen now because of Huddle, but when I first started going in 99 to the symposium, it was in Kansas City, and the first one I show up to, there's guys in these rooms with 8 VCRs stacked on one top of each other, and you'd bring your videotape, and they'd have 8 copies, and they'd hand them out, and people were just handing them out to everybody. And a really funny short story about that, I went, when I got the job in 04 at Port St. Lucie, I went to the Pop Warner National Championship in Orlando, and I'd heard that there was a single wing team there, and they're from Waterbury, Connecticut, or something like that. And so I went and watched them, and they just destroyed this other team with the single wing, full spin. And they were running wedge and everything. And after the game was over, I walked over to the coach, and I said, hey, Coach, I watched your game. I really enjoyed that. And he said, well, we got this offense from this guy named Doc Ward, and he lives here in Florida, or he lived in Florida, now he lives in North Carolina, and it's just amazing. And I said, well, how did you block that? And he goes, well, I got this tape from this guy, Doug Kerr, and he runs this blocking scheme, and I was hoping to meet him when I got down here because I wanted to get and talk to him, and because he sent me this videotape, and it's like the holy grail of wedge blocking for us. And I said, well, I know that guy. And he said, you know Doug Kerr? I said, yeah, that's me. And, man, he wanted to buy me beer and take me out to dinner. And I'd never met him in my life. You know, I only knew him from a mailing label. And you know, that's just the small world we live in the single wing world, where it comes full circle. You know, I spent a lot of time with Corey a couple of years ago when we were running the inverted veer, basically the new power reed. We were running that back in the early 2000s, and we showed it to him in a clinic. And now I just called Corey the other day saying, hey, man, I need to get your film and see what you're doing with it because I need a wrinkle. You know, so
yeah.
it's pay it forward in single wing football.
Yeah, you know, and you got to dumb up every year. The second you think that you got it all, that's when you start heading downhill. You know, you just simply got to dumb up and learn new things and open up to learn new things. You know, to help your kids, as I say, and just get everybody you can on board so that you can be as productive as you possibly can. Well,
mm-hmm.
We're running short of time right here. I only had you for an hour, and because I know it was a week night, and I wanted to get you off to bed and grade papers and everything. You want to say, man?
Well, I tell you what, you know what you're doing, is such a great, cool thing, and I've listened to almost all your episodes, and I just hope we keep this thing going and keep the connections. We have such a new regime of guys running it now, and don't get me wrong, I love watching those guys from Clemson running it this year. Just made me so smile and happy. But you know, you keep doing what you're doing, and people that listen to your show need to know, look no further than to learn that offense from you, because you flat get with it. And I appreciate all you do for our offense and all you do for our organization, and I'm hoping to get to learn from you someday soon.
Well, you know, I learned a lot. I tell you what, that night I sat in my bed and looked at the wedge, and I said, I got to do that. You know? That just made all the
sense
in the
world. It's the dumbest playing football, but it works.
I know. So, and I appreciated you sending me that video because and we had never met. You know, that's fascinating
right.
thing. But we had never met before in life. I don't know if I called you, sent you an email or what, but I know it within 3 days I had a tape there. And then I got to meet these other crazy guys in this thing, and it's been history
since
then. It is crazy.
Yep.
Well, Doug, I really appreciate you coming on, man. And you know, we gotta do this again. And
absolutely, anytime.
Thanks again, man. You have a good night, and you know, give all your kids a hug and tell them you love them, okay?
Will do. We'll do, Coach.
Okay, buddy. Talking to you later.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yes, sir.
Bye.
God, that was the great Doug Kerr. And I tell you what, if you get a chance to meet this guy in person, you know, he can articulate the thing for you, man. And he's a normal guy. He's just a fun-loving guy, but he's so giving. And Doc Ward always makes me laugh because he say he fire him every week, you know, and hire him back. You know, that's a great father son relationship there. You got to get to know that. But guys, we're at the end of it, and I appreciate you coming on this night. I appreciate everybody tuning in. We just decided to do it tonight instead of conflicting with the Super Bowl, whereas. You know, I don't like to put people in conflict. Technology, we can just about do anything we can. Now, with saying that, we'll be back Wednesday night. We got the great Jerry Shedd from Virginia, and he'll be talking about his single wing brand. Guys, Just like Doug, you know, they all come from that tree of Doc Ward, of George Mikovic, Jim Ahern. I mean, you want to learn, but they each take their own way of doing it. So Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, we'll be back on, and we want you to join us. And I think we got everything up on Jerry's highlight tapes and everything, so you can take a look at, and you can ask questions about it. Doug, are you still there? Doug? Well, I'll get him to send me his contact information and everything, and I'll post it up on the Around the Hammer site. But these guys are available to you and everything. Well, we're getting ready to sign out, and I hope that you tune in on next week. I mean, not next week, but Wednesday, so that we can have another good show. You know, we're going to bring the best to you. This week, Wednesday, we'll have Terry Sinatra. Then on Sunday, we go back to our normal time. We come back home to South Carolina, and we have a good guy talk about King T. All right, so guys, have a good night. And my son, hug somebody, tell somebody you love them. There's a big world out there right now. We just got to hang in there together and get back to liking each other. That is so good right now. We got to get back to liking each other.
And I think to myself,
so I bid you good night.
What a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself.